sing the Anabakoach. Anabakoach, Gedula Chemincha, Tati, Terura. Aleph Bet Gimel, Yud Tav Tzadi. These six letters have a gematria that is 506. This is the same gematria as the phrase Ahavat Hinam, which translates as unconditional love. And this teaches us that the beginning of the creative process starts with love. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora kufrei shayan sintet nun. The two letters for the month of Adar are the kuf and the gimel. The kuf created the constellation Dagim, which is the fishes, and the month of Adar, which is the month of Pisces. The Gimel created the planet Jupiter, which is Tzedek in Hebrew. Tzedek means righteousness. The six letters, Kuf Resh Ayin Sin Tet Nun, form two Hebrew words, Kra Satan, which translates as tear up the Satan, tear up the negativity. The same six letters can be rearranged, permuted into two other words, Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates. And that's a reminder to us to keep guards on our gates, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our mouth. The entryway for the negative forces to attack our internal essence. God forbid. The kuf that created this month of Adar and the constellation, the kuf is the double agent. The kuf was designed by Hashem to feed the negative side just enough to keep it equal, just enough to keep it in balance so that it could present to us an illusion. The illusion that there is a good and a bad, and we have the free choice to choose it. Without the negative side, we would not be able to choose. We would not have free choice. But it's through our mistakes that we feed this negative side so much more than the minimum. Na gibor dor sheyehudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalad yud kaf shin. Nun gimel dalad has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, parnassah, sustenance. Sustenance is the fulfillment for our desires. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that allows us to take back the energy from the negative side, take back the energy that we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Parchem tacharem rakame sitkatcha tamid gamlem betetresh tzaditav gimel. Chasin kadosh v'rov tuvcha na'el adatach. Het kuf bet, tet nunayin. Yachid geye Ramcha pene Zokre kedushatach Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. This is a sequence of letters that we can utilize to help speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium. Shavatenu kabel Ushma tziakatenu Yodea talumot Shin kufav Tzadi yud taf. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, have a gematria of 400, which represents the four worlds times ten sephirot within 10 sephirot. 400 represents the perfection. Vav, Tzadi, Yud, Taf, the last four letters, have a gematria of 506. The same gematria as the first six letters of the Anabakoach. The same gematria of Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love. And we learn from this consciousness of love needs to be injected in order to create the perfection, to correct what we came here in this world to correct. These six letters can be utilized by us to help manifest in our lives all of the positive desires that we have. In the last verse, we say in a whisper, which we refer to as silently, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Voed. That verse we say to ground any excess energy, any energy that would be too much for our vessels, any energy that would be around to create chaos. We ground it like the ground wire in an electrical circuit. We ground this excess energy so that it does not come to harm us. This is part of Hashem's mercy. I'm now going to read from the Zohar. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunenehu. Tachatzi Ha Yihu Rugza Di Yihu Kom Sitra Achara Kima Di Amaran Dvae Barnash Le Istamra Mine U It Parasha Me'elo V'ad k'tiv Elohei me'saka lo ta'aseh lach begin li avasha karmach uktiv batrei et hag hamatzot tishmor tishmor da sitra dik dusha tva'e barnash lunatra le vilayach lach le begin sitra achara ve'i yechlaf le'ha ihu masiv v'sa'iv lekol man dekariv v'chadei. I'm reading from section 7 of the Parasha of Tetzaveh. Matzot and counting of the Omer. Come and see, this anger is idolatry, the other side. As we have said, thus a person must guard himself against it and separate from it. Therefore it is written, you shall make you no molten Elohim. Shemot chapter 34. Make you means you shall not harm yourself. And immediately following it is written, the feast of unleavened bread shall you keep. The same chapter in Shemot. Keep refers to the side of holiness, that a person should keep and not exchange it for the other side. If he exchanges it for the other side, he becomes defiled and defiles whoever comes near him. We will speak at length about this idea that the Zohar is teaching. But on a very quick answer, when we get angry, our neshama level of soul leaves us and returns outside of our body. And what takes its place is a neshama from someone else who is connected to the other side. And that neshama is considered idol worship. The verse talking about not harming ourselves with molten idols is talking about our own passion, our own anger that harms us. We'll speak much more about this during these classes. Tonight, our study is about magidim, magids, entities that come to help us reach the level of Ruach HaKodesh. Before I start, does anybody have any questions? I purposely lengthened the Ana B'Koach tonight. I left a lot of time to meditate. Not just the words that I spoke of on the verses that I speak about, which helps set the tone and helps direct the intention of your meditation, which is why we do it. But to give you the opportunity of lengthening your own meditative techniques. I've known people who've done the Ana B'Koach approximately 2, 2.5, 3 hours. Not everybody has that kind of time. And not everybody who has that kind of time has it all the time. But the Ana B'Koach is one of the tools that we utilize in order to connect us to Ruach HaKodesh. Every word we say, we create an angel. That angel can be from the negative side or the positive side. When we say the Ana B'Koach, it's the positive side. It can be an angel from the positive side that is faulty. We create the body, but the soul, the internal essence of that angel is the consciousness we had. So why are we saying the Ana B'Koach is a question we need to be asking ourselves. The ultimate level of intention should be to get closer to God. That is the ultimate level of the desire to receive. Because when we get closer to God, we give pleasure to God. It's not for us to get closer to God. It's to give God pleasure by being closer to Him. That's a very deep subject, and we'll talk about that another night in our class that's on Wednesday nights when we talk about the mitzvot. But continuing in our discussion, we create angels. Those angels, on some level, can be magidim. They can be supportive of our reaching the level of Ruach HaKodesh. What are the criteria for reaching Ruach HaKodesh? Why does some people reach Ruach HaKodesh and some people do not? The main difference is desire. Do you have a desire to get closer to God? Or do you have a desire to be honored because you can tell the future. The difference in our desire is whether Ruach HaKodesh will rest upon us, whether we will be given this tool to be utilized for the benefit of our lives and the lives around us. So the verse that we spoke about in the Zohar, and I don't plan it, I just read the Zohar, the next verse in the Zohar that I'm reading in my order of the weekly reading. So it's really circumstances, it's coincidence that I read about anger, and we will be talking about anger. Anger is the devastating emotion that hurts us. But not only does it hurt us, it hurts those around us. Because this impurity called Tumah, which is the other side, the level called idol worshiping, comes into our internal essence, into our soul. And it's not us. Our neshama leaves our body immediately when we get angry. Where does the neshama go? Remember the discussion we've had from time to time about the 88 inches around us? The 88 inches in every direction that is our aura in modern parlance? That's where the neshama goes. The neshama is the chariot, is the throne from for the higher levels of soul, the Chaya and Yechida. And those entities, those parts of our soul, our higher selves, are outside of our body. They rarely come into our body. The Nishama is the highest level of soul that inhabits our body. So what is it that what's going on when we get angry? Our neshama goes outside of our body. And there's really a spiritual law that's also true in the physical world. Nature abhors a vacuum. There is no such place in the worlds where there isn't light that darkness does not come. There is either light or there is darkness. Our whole computer industry is built on that concept of the binary system, on or off, light or darkness. That is the whole issue. When the neshama leaves the body, that empty space, and I'm really speaking spiritually and metaphorically, when the neshama leaves the body, that empty space is taken up by a klipa, by another neshama that has been corrupted and overtaken and controlled by the negative side. The neshama, each and every one, both from the good side and the bad side, from ourselves and the negative side. That neshama is always pure, always good. But it's veiled by the actions that we do. Those veils are carried by the neshama. Those veils can become overwhelming where they control the actions and take away the free choice of the neshama. And that's what we're referring to when we say the neshama of the other side comes into that empty space. And that is called idol worshiping. Because there's no free choice. There's just the desire to receive for oneself alone, controlling the desire to receive in order to share. And the system, the correction, is to change that. But that neshama has no free choice and isn't capable of changing it. And this is the self-destruction associated with anger. Now, I can talk about all kinds of things about anger. The gematria of the word af, aleph, pei, so feet. But the essence of what I've just said to you is why it is so important that we stay away from anger. What do I mean by staying away from anger? Because this is a prerequisite for receiving Ruach HaKodesh. The Zohar, in the Parasha of Petetzaveh, earlier, section 6 and 7, the Zohar speaks so strongly about this. It says that that entity, that neshama of the other side that comes into that empty space, never leaves. It just takes up the space. And there's a vague verse in the Zohar that kind of indicates that there is a way to replace that neshama, that negative neshama, with who you were before you got angry. But it is very, very difficult. Anger is just a simple no, 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 no. People do get angry. They mustn't. Not that they shouldn't. They mustn't. It is harming them. It is harming their souls, the neshama, the ruach, the nefesh. It is harming their body. We age physically, and the greatest theft of the 190 years or the 300 years that we are given in this lifetime, the greatest theft of that time comes by us getting angry. So how do we work on remaining anger-free? The easiest way is to control your emotions with your intellect. It's much easier for a Sagittarius to do it than it is for a Cancer to do it. Because a Cancer is motivated by emotion. And the Sagittarius is motivated by intellect. But ultimately, the intellectual knowledge of how damaging anger is will enter into your heart. When you get angry, stop your reaction. Because anger is only a reaction. It's a reaction to your ego being bruised, to your ego being hurt, to your ego wanting to control. That is the only reason one gets angry. It's always related to the ego. Stay away from anger. saying the Anna Bekoach instead of allowing your anger to run is a useful tool. Saying a verse of the Anna Bekoach, whichever one comes to mind. Start at the first if you can, whichever one comes to mind. Visualizing the Hebrew letters will help control your anger. Visualizing the Tetragrammaton, the Yud, He, Vav, He, will help control your anger. Anything that gets you off of your ego, away from your ego, will help control your anger. Now, we have taught you the Anna Bekoach, and we say it at the beginning of every one of our classes. Sometimes we say it quickly, and sometimes we lengthen it. The Anna Bekoach is the tool that we have been taught to utilize, and which we teach you to utilize for the purpose of learning Hebrew letters, which will cause you to change, cause your soul to change, help control your anger, help increase your love, all of the things that are about your musar, about changing yourself to be a better person today than you were yesterday. The same thing applies to the 72 names. And we suggest that you use the 72 names, including your Hebrew name or your English name spelled with Hebrew letters, that you scan those as well as the 72 names of God. We also teach that you should scan the 72 names that come from the Tzaddikim, which have the same shoresh, but are in a different order, which that different order represents Malchut instead of Bina. One day I'll give a class on the 72 names from the Tzaddikim. But in the meantime, each and every person is welcome to request their own set of 72 names from God and 72 names from the Tzaddikim with their English and or Hebrew name interspersed within it. Again, this is drawing the energy. It's causing your souls to change. These are steps that will bring you closer to the level of Ruach HaKodesh. Blessing of food before one eats, and almost more important, if not equally more important, is saying a blessing after we eat. We call that the Birkat Hamazon when we are eating bread and we do wash for Hamotzi and say the Hamotzi, and then afterwards we say the Birkat Hamazon, which is rather a lengthy blessing, but well worth doing. But even if we aren't eating bread, if we're having a snack that consists of a piece of cake, we have a blessing after as well as before. One day I'll give a class on explaining the reasoning behind that. But remember, each word we say, each action we take, is building an angel. And that angel can become a magid, a storyteller to us. Magid means storyteller. prayer in and of itself is a beneficial, but is not really the path to Magidim. Prayer is beneficial. We need to pray. It's a mitzvah to pray. But prayer is not the path to generating a Magid. Prayer has a different purpose. The root of the word prayer, tefillah, comes from the same root that means secondary. Getting closer to God is giving pleasure to God. That's the consciousness of all of these actions. Another source that leads us to Ruach HaKodesh is the mikveh. Another tool rather than source is the mikveh. A mikveh is a ritual bath. It's a bath made of a certain amount of rainwater. It's a bath, a tub, made of a certain size of water, of which a certain amount of that water must be not necessarily rainwater, but natural water. An ocean is a mikveh. It's natural water. A river is a mikveh. It's natural water. But a bathtub in our house is not natural water. It's not a mikveh. It's not big enough, and it does not have water that has remained uncorrupted in its path from wherever it came from, be it the ocean desalinated or be it rainwater itself. But if it flows through a channel of man-made material, it becomes corrupted, and it is not the same type of water, the same quality of water, spiritually, than the water in a mikveh that comes directly from rain, directly from natural water. Women find it necessary. Let me rephrase that. Women have a monthly cycle, which, in order to cleanse the impurity of that monthly cycle, to cleanse the judgment associated with that monthly cycle, they need to immerse themselves in a mikveh once a month. Men do not have a mitzvah to go to the mikveh. But per the writings of the Ari, a man should not go more than 3 days without being in a mikveh. Because a man cannot handle the impurity that reaches him, that sits on him, that attacks him. We don't see it. This is a metaphorically, but it's real. These impurities are constantly trying to get into us through our gates, through different attaching themselves to us, and the only way to clean those impurities is by going into a mikveh. Again, with the consciousness that you want to cleanse yourself to be closer to God. Another tool we must use in order to be able to reach the level of Ruach HaKodesh is we may not be sad. We may not be depressed. Do not allow yourself to fall into sadness, especially in the month of Adar, which, as the phrase says, when Adar comes in, happiness increases. Didn't you all get happy as soon as Adar came in? Well, somehow it doesn't work like that, only because we don't let it work like that. The happiness is there. All you have to do is decide to be happy. But I was just diagnosed with cancer, someone will say. I just lost my parent or my child, God forbid, someone else will say. How can I be happy? Isn't it okay to be sad? It's human to be sad. It's human to accept the roller coaster of today I'm sad and yesterday I was happy and tomorrow I'll be happy again. It's human to accept that pattern of behavior. But you want to be close to God? There is absolutely no reason to be sad. The doctor just told you you had cancer, Chas v'Shalom. Did you start to laugh? I did. When the doctor came into the recovery room after my colonoscopy and says, I found cancer. I said, thank you. And I started to laugh. What a gift. The ability to look at myself, to be given the knowledge of where and how I have caused disconnection from the light in which cancer was allowed to grow. What a gift. What joy. Yes, it's human to be sad. But we're not here in this world to be human. And make no mistake, that's a tool of the negative side. It's okay to be sad, isn't it? Yes, it's okay if you want to be human. But you didn't come here to be human. You came here to learn how to be God. To learn how to be creative. To learn to appreciate the joy and pleasures that God created for us. And by using that joy and pleasure, give Him happiness in return. That's the circuit of energy. Be happy with what you have and ask for more. So, don't get sad. What about the people who have a chemical imbalance that they're depressed? What about the people who need medicines? The manic depressive states. There are many different psychological illnesses that cause depression. We understand that, but we also understand that there is a reason that that soul chose to come to that body with that DNA chemical makeup. Someone comes into this world with the correction, the tikkun, of being a thief. That person finds it much more difficult to control his orientation towards thievery than another person who does not have that orientation. There are people who are born honest. Sometimes those persons born honest come into generations where there's nothing but dishonesty, and they have a very difficult time. And sometimes people are born with their orientation to be dishonest, and they have to struggle to resist that, to change that. The same thing applies to people who are oriented to being sad, to being depressed, who have learned that they get attention when they're ill, when they're down, when they're depressed. This is not the path to Ruach HaKodesh. Only the path of joy is the path to Ruach HaKodesh. Hold on. Excuse me one second. The most important trait to achieve Ruach HaKodesh is to be humble. Not false humility, but true humbleness. As the Torah said, Moses was the most humble man alive. How does one become humble? Humble is someone who has no ego of their own. But it's very possible that that leads to false humility, because what they've done is veil their ego. Oh, how humble I am. At the same time, that ego is hiding behind that false attitude. The method to achieve humility is very simply to frequently request, you have a conversation with God and you say, Hashem, I need help. That is the beginning and the path to humility. Hashem, I need help. I need help in my day-to-day actions. I need help in knowing what I should do. There is no limit to the consciousness of I need help. Say it all the time. Have it in your mind every minute of every day and every night. I need help. This is the path to true humility. And humility is a prerequisite to Ruach HaKodesh. You cannot ask a question, Hashem, what do I do, when you are not being humble? The fact that you ask the question is starting that process of I need help, but make it more explicit. Say it. Hashem, I need help. What should I do? What can I do? What action should I take? There is a story told of Rabbi Susha. Rabbi Susha is a very amazing personality. Rabbi Susha was the brother of Rabbi Elimensk. There were actually three brothers, and the two of them are spoken of repeatedly together. The third brother from time to time, and there are many, many different stories about Rabbi Susha and his brother. But Rabbi Susha was on a level that when his teacher, the Magid de Mezrich, the second generation of the Hasidic movement. When his teacher would start to talk, and he said the first word, Rabbi Susha received all of the light on a conscious level. And he became so energized, he couldn't sit in the room, and he ran out. He didn't hear the rest of the discussion, but he got everything. And the story is told about Rabbi Susha that as a young man, or not really a young man, he had a family, he was going from town to town, as many of these stories and famous rabbis did. He was going from town to town soliciting charity, soliciting tzedakah, doing good deeds. One of the major good deeds is to raise money for dowries so that brides can get married. Rabbi Susha was going from town to town, and he was on his way back home, having raised the sufficient funds to marry off his last daughter. And he arrived at a town, and he looks around, and there's nobody there, until he finally finds them in the social hall of the synagogue. And everybody in the town is there, but there's no joy in this room. So he asks, what's wrong? And he's told, there is to be a wedding today. But the bride's father has lost the dowry. And without the dowry, the groom's father refuses to let him get married. And everybody is sitting around depressed. Rabbi Susha knows what he has to do. He goes up to the father of the bride, and he asks questions. Where did you lose the money? Where do you think you lost the money? How much money was it? What denominations were the bills in? All of the details. And then he left. And he went to the money changer in town, who untypically was not a Jewish man. And he changed his money that he'd been carrying for his own daughter. He changed it into the exact bills that the dowry that was lost contained. And then the story is told that he goes back into the room where the wedding is to be held with great joy. I found it. Here it is. And everybody is so excited. They're ready to start the wedding. How wonderful that it's been found. And Rabbi Susha says, stop. I want my reward. I want 10%. The townspeople are just totally taken aback. This is a holy man. He's asking for a reward. Totally distraught. They become so upset that they start to beat him up to make him give up his 10% request so that they can have the wedding. And he takes this beating. The townspeople are so upset by this whole incident. Eventually the wedding takes place, but they are so upset they've thrown Rab Susha into the street. A Jew doesn't do that to another Jew. He goes back to his home and to his study with his teacher, Rabbi Elimensk, the Magid de Mezrich. And a few Shabbatot later, one of the villagers from this village arrives at the court, at the Shabbat table of the Magid of Mezrich. And he sees Rabbi Susha as being honored. He's one of the Talmidim. He's very well known. What is going on? And he cannot believe that this horrible man would be so honored at the court of the Magid of Mezrich. So he asks, when he visits with the Magid of Mezrich to receive his blessing, he says, how can you honor this man? And he tells him the story. And the Magid of Mezrich, being a very wise man, says, I must understand what took place. So when he calls Rav Zusha in to hear the man's story, because perhaps maybe it's not true. And Rav Zusha listens to the man's story, and the Magid of Mezrich turns to him and says, is it true? And he says, yes, it is, Rav. And the Magid of Mezrich says, how could you do that? Please explain yourself. And Rav Zusha tells the following. He tells how he left the wedding, knowing that he was going to change the money, knowing that he was going to be the hero, knowing that he was going to do this good deed of helping them provide for a wedding when he was using his own money. And as he walked back from the money changer, he kept feeling his ego getting stronger and stronger. What a righteous man I am. Who else would do such a thing? So I am such a righteous man. His ego was getting stronger and stronger. As he walked through the door of the synagogue into the social hall, he says to himself, Rabbi Susha, I cannot do this action with this ego. This is not a positive deed. It may look positive to the world, but it's not positive with my consciousness. So he asked for his reward, knowing that he would be beat up, knowing that he would be able to lower his ego, to be thought the fool, to be abused, knowing that this was the way to get control of his ego. Hashem, I need help. Does anyone have any questions? Tomorrow night's class, Wednesday's class, will start at 10 p.m. L.A. time and is the subject of probably Torah study or maybe just knowing God. We'll decide tomorrow. And Thursday we will be reading from the Zohar, from the Parasha of Tetzaveh. I wish you all good night. May you all be well.